to.
You can't go and buy it. The fish that comes in here now, your Lakers, that's trout. They're not the trout that used to be when I was fishing. Are a lot of stuff that they take off the fishermen that are not supposed to sell, or they're not fit to be returned back to the water. So you're not getting a fresh fish. Once the fish has got a yellow gill, a white gill, he's dead and he's not fresh. A lot of times I went to fish houses, I do buy some, and if they're dressed, I open the breast, I always want to see my fish. If the bones are sticking out, I don't want them. Because that fish is no good. But years ago, when we used to fish perch and stuff, we used to sell to a Jew out of Chicago, old Sam Wax. He came down by us good many times and stayed overnight and visit. So one day I went to Chicago and I thought I'd stop and see his place. I come in and he didn't recognize me. So I asked him if he had some perch. He says, yeah, we got a lot of perch. But he showed me perch that were yellow. I says, you mean to say that's all you got? He says, yeah. Well, I says, where's the fish I shipped you last night? Oh, but he says, we don't sell them that way here, he says. If we sold them, he says, fresh the way you ship them to us, he says, we'd never sell these. So see what they make the people eat, too.
Around what time was this when you went to Chicago?
Oh, that was in the early 30s or the latter parts of the 28s, 29s, like this. Mm-hmm. That's the way it goes. So.
What happened during the Depression as far as fishing went?
Everybody was scratching to make a dollar. Depression was a tough one. I had three men working besides myself. I had a hired girl and my wife in the hospital. And I was farming besides. And milking 22 head of cattle, all hand milking. We'd come home off the ice, make chores, have supper, pack our fish, and then by that time we had trucks and cars, and then we'd haul them to Green Bay and come back that night. Sometimes it was midnight, 4 o'clock, get up, go to work the next day. That's the life we owed fellows then. Now that's just the credit we're getting for it.
You said you were a fireman?
Hmm?
You said you were a fireman.
A fireman?
No. I misunderstood what you said. You're farming.
For farming, yeah. I was farming, sure. I had 120 acres of my home, and I had another 120 acres I was renting beside. I had my hand in every place I could make a dollar. And there's a good many people that didn't have no mortgage, no sickness, and they couldn't make ends meet during the Depression. A lot of them asked me, how is it that you are making it? I says, I am. But I says, I can't pay nothing on my principal. I says, I can pay my taxes, make a living. I says, but I says, that's it. It was tough. A dollar was a dollar in them days.
When did the people start coming up towards your area for vacationing?
Oh, generally in June, they start coming in. June, that's when they'd come up.
And how did that change the area?
Well, along in where we were, it wasn't just too bad. The people just started, that got rough enough that they start buying a piece of land here and a piece of land there, and then they start harping on the township because they didn't have no roads. See, that's the way things start. Well, then, the chairman, my cousin was the chairman, I remember that, Norman Herlash, and he, and some of the others, well, they decided there's only one thing to do to county, is to put them blacktop road and then raise their taxes way up. That was a road all along the edge of the beach and cliffs and stuff. And then they started to bark. They started to holler. Oh, that's true. Why should we have to pay that much taxes? See? But they wanted everything their way, see? And it's going to get worse. They're not done yet.
Did the vacationers bring any kind of business?
Well, not too much in the southern door, excepting around Little Sturgeon, Riley's Bay, and Sand Bay going in towards the park, you know. They're bringing more in there. But back on this end, no, they're not. Of course, there's nightclubs all along the lakes now, and they're making a living. That's the whole thing. Because there's nothing here in the wintertime. There ain't no more fishing. Years ago, the fishing was what brought the people here. Because I remember one year, that's years back, and I was still a young man. I went down the beach one morning, the ice had moved, and there was a crack about, oh, I'd say 6 inches off from shore in about 15, 20 feet of water. And you could look in there and there was just solid fish, hair. And all you had to do was throw your line in there and do this and just drag them out as fast as you could pull. And there was no trouble at all to take a salt barrel a fish, because we used to use a hook, and every fish hook's got a barb on so the fish can't pull off. But we put a pearl, a white pearl on it, and put it below the barb so it couldn't come off, so just the point it'd be sticking out, just like a needle, or a clothespin. We even caught them on clothespins. And then just pull them out. And we even had people from O'Connell that drive across the ice with a team and a sled, and they'd buy the fish off of the sport fishermen and haul them back to O'Connell. So you can imagine how arctic they were in there. Now, I remember a good many times when we'd come home from lifting at night, you know, in the evening, it was a little bit early, we'd see all their holes where they were, had been fishing, and we'd just stop, go in there, and sometimes catch 200 or 300 of them, just in no time. They were just in there, that's all there was to it. Today, I don't know where we'd have to go. Just heard, there's a few bluefins around, but that's a different fish than a heron.
You said something about the different kinds of nets that people used and how that influenced what happened.
Well, when they started setting them, they didn't catch anything, so and then we started getting them amphoreels. And they get in these nets, even the gill nets. And they get on that fish and suck the blood out of them, and then you got dead fish. Well, they finally found out where they hatch out. See, they go up these muddy streams, where it's kind of marshy, that's where they hatch, and they start spraying. Now they're coming back again. And there's probably a lot of these lakers that do get killed that we don't even know.
I'd like to go back again to what you told me earlier about your father's land and the fact that people would come onto your land and that it became a problem when you were up near Gardner.
Well, sure. What are you going to do if you own a piece of land over here and you got cattle in it? Well, that's what we had it for. We bought it because there was a creek going through. The lake was there. We had water for them. We didn't have to worry about them. But the gate wasn't good enough. They left it open. And then after we start locking the gate, then they'd shoot the locks and cut the fence and cattle go out. We spend sometimes 2-3 days looking for cattle. Well, we got disgusted of it. Put ads in paper. That won't help. They mostly came from Green Bay back in there. And we couldn't be there all the time and have to tell them what to do or keep out of here. I remember once, down at a game warden, even pulled his car right in the gate. But during sucker time, see? Some of the suckers run in the spring of the year. Night went in there, the gate was open. So we left it open because I wasn't going to stay too long. So he pulled his car right in the gate. Figured if there was anybody in there, he knew somebody was in there, the gate was open, most likely. So he could stop them when they come out, see? To catch the guys. If they were spearing them, because you had no right to spear them. So when I come up, I says, get that car out of the way. I didn't want no suckers. Is there anybody up there? I said, no. Nobody up there. That's the way it works. They'd watch you as close as a clock, and then they wouldn't do nothing. State of Wisconsin is radical, as far as my part.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that they don't figure for the people. They didn't look ahead of this long enough before, but they should have. Back in the 30s when we went after them, that's when they should have. Now you figure 30 years back to now, we're coming on 76. Our waters are improving nil already. Look what we'd have now. Because we still got perch. Don't worry about the perch. The perch are not going to all die out. Because they get in the weeds, like on the west shore. There's a lot of marsh in there. And that water is filtered out somewhat more than it is where there's no weeds. And that's where they feed. About the only time they come out that you can get them is when they come out to spawn. But they mostly spawn on a gravel bed. But I remember years ago at the power plant there a Wisconsin Public Power plant there at Green Bay. Why, heck, they'd come right up that little stream. They had to put screens. They were plugging up the water going in there for cooling their generators. Walleyes, perch, everything else. Except I went a good many times after I quit fishing, you know, and just went up. They were all coming out of them weeds, see? So, and that's where they are now. Whatever there's left.
How did you relax after you'd spent all the time fishing?
Pardon?
How did you relax?
Did I relax? Yeah. Well, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed fishing. I enjoyed going out there with the boat, even though it was on the ice, because we knew when we went out there that we was going to have some excitement of some kind. Either we was going to get some fish, we didn't get any, but then it got a little disgusting, of course, but we got along, managed to try and do the best we could. We knew we had to work, that's all there was to it. And there wasn't a job to be bought at that time. You couldn't buy a job. Or you couldn't go on relief. I remember years back when we had WPA days in the town of Garner, they had a lot of trouble there. So the chairman and supervisors come up and they asked me if I'd take charge of the crew. Well, I says, heck, I says, I'm not on WPA. Nobody said, we got to have somebody to straighten the crew out so we get a little of something done. So, finally I did. I decided, well, I'll take a chance. So I went up and straightened it out for them. I straightened the crew out. And it didn't take long. Within 3 days, I had them all gone. The guy, it didn't work. I just put him in a place. He was by himself. And he didn't want to be by himself.
Were there any taverns where the old fishermen gathered?
Oh, sure. There was taverns for the fishermen. Yeah, there's a lot of them. And they like their booze. They like, I remember when I first started, some of the boys, they were fishing before I was with the boat, and I'd come in sometime and I was seasick. What's the matter? They'd laugh at me. I said, what's the matter? You're seasick again? Yeah. But I said, I know I ain't drunk. And them fellas, they used to drink, you know, like fish. But then one of the guys says, listen, he says, you want me to tell you to give you the cure? I said, sure. But he says, take a bottle with you. Whiskey, he says, when you feel you're going to getting seasick, he says, take a couple of good drinks, he says, and that'll straighten you out. And I could sit by that motor for 2 hours when he was on the run to dress in fish. Never bothered me. That boat could roll flat on either side. It didn't make no difference. But every time you came to the dock, why, you'd always feel your way, you know. You could always tell a sailor when he'd walk, you know. He'd always pick his feet to feel what next step he was going to hit before. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Did your family help you with fishing?
Not much, no. Family never helped me much. I just had 2 daughters. My wife's in the hospital, maybe part-time. And I had a hired girl. And two, 300 men. Well, but they all love fish, especially the oldest of my daughters. She's just crazy for fish. And we always had fish. I've had so many different parties work for me. And we used to do, we always had meat, we had fish for supper. Our supper was always our big meal because the daytime we were gone, see. And I was quite a guy for whitefish soup.
Soup?
Soup, yeah, all the whitefish soup. And, I can't eat that. The other guy didn't say, I don't want none of that. You know, I said, you don't have to eat it. I said, it's all other stuff you need. But, I says, give me a little dish, I'll try some. Tried it. Then after that, it always asked, when are you going to make some whitefish soup, see? And by God, that's pretty near every day. Of course, it was rich.
How did you make it?
With milk. We'd dress out our fish, skin it, dress it out good, leave the bones in. Then we'd start boiling our milk, and we'd put the fish in, or two, whatever it was, depends how much you needed of it. And as it cooked, we got just about cooked, you could just take it by the backbone and pick the fish and just rub all the meat off. You had just about all the bones, maybe a few of the small bones that you wouldn't pick up and would, you know, break off probably. And then we'd serve it with salt and pepper and butter, a lot of butter. And that's what made it good, and crackers. Some wanted crackers and some wanted toast, you know. And it was a rich dish, which whitefish is an oily fish. So. And we had fish per day every night, and perch, herring, whitefish, trout, and meat, beef, pork, everything. We always was well fed, regardless of us during depression, because we had all our own stuff to eat, see. We raised everything during the summer then. But still, it made it tough.
Did you have special Belgian foods?
Oh, yes. We make out of this what they call this Belgian trip. That's made out of pork and cabbage. And there's still the day of today, there's a lot of it going around. You mostly get it at Belgian Day at Brussels. You can come up there and that's what they'll have. Belgian trip. For their Belgian Day. And you can buy it in a lot of stores. If you go through Dykesville, stop in the Modris. He used to be from Brussels. His dad is dead now. But his son is running that. He's pretty near as old as I am. But it's only on Fridays you can get them, and you better get there early because you ain't going to get it if you come there late.
Really?
You won't be any, no. Because he just makes certain amounts, you know, and then it...
So the people know to come on Fridays?
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of times, like I was getting it here, because Mrs. Van Zeeland from Dykesville, she lived there, and she used to own this property. She'd bring me some. I'd tell her, oh, stop and get it. But now a lot of that stuff I doesn't eat. I doesn't eat no pork, no dark meat. But I wish the good old days were back. They almost, that's what they say, the good old days, the good old days, the good old days. But they were the tough old days. you didn't plow, you didn't go out there and do some plowing and sit in a tractor with a radio and a talkie-talkie that you could call back to the house. You were walking back of a plow. If it was, the ground was too hard, you had lumps that big. If it was too wet, you had to wear boots. It's an awful change in the last 50 years, you know.
What was it like when you first started farming?
Well, when I first started farming, it was, we used to raise a lot of Scotch peas and canary peas, but mostly Scotch peas. But then, at that time, we didn't have alfalfa hay. See? That's something that's coming after. And the alfalfa was what brought the pea lice. There was a lice in the alfalfa, and after the peas got so high and the peas were tender, they got in the peas and they ate everything, and everything turned yellow. We didn't have no peas. So then we couldn't raise no peas.
So you went over to what?
Alfalfa. Alfalfa and oats and barley. Rye, wheat.
Did a lot of people raise the peas before?
Oh yes, oh God yes.
Belgians?
Oh yes, a lot of us raised the peas. And there was a lot of, I remember one year we got $6 a bushel for it. I don't know. We had three kinds of peas we had. Big green ones, then we had the narrow fats, then we had the little white ones. That was all hard work in them days. Even all your harvest was, everything else was hauled in the barn, then trashed out of the barn. They'd fill the barn full of grain, cut with a grain binder. When they first started, they had a weepers, all cut by hand, and all hand-tied.
Did you do that?
I've done a little of it, oh yes. Because we used to get out in the fields and cut the corners out, you know, so you could come in and swing around to not waste no grain, because we tried to save all the grain we could, because every grain we saved was a dollar saved, so that's the way we had to do it at that time. But one thing I never done was trash it by hand with them. I don't know what they call that anymore. So they had a long stick and they had two pieces of leather put this way with another stick on it, like a beater, you know, and they just throw it on and it just pounded, you know, worked the grain out of the straw. Then they'd shake and blow it out of the wind. But I remember going to the grist mill with wheat and have it ground for flour, and then have our flour for the whole year.
Where was the grist mill?
Well, at the time that I was on there, we had Luxembourg. It was the closest one we had. And before that, it was way out there on the other side of Bay Settlement, just before you, well, just right on the corner when you turn in on University Avenue going in. It was on that northwest corner in there. And a lot of people walked with grain on their back and get it up there to get it ground and walk back. My old granddaddy told me a good many times. He carried a plow from Green Bay back to Newmore on his back. through the woods and trails. Wolves were howling. They couldn't make it one day. They had to notice. And my granddad, on my father's side, carried a calf from New Franklin back to Daytona, into Daytona Garden. That's worse than a plow. Well, they had to get cattle, had to have something to get started, see? It's like my dad always told me. When he first came on the farm, he got 3 cows on my mother's side. My mother was a de Kaiser. And dad, well, he had got the farm from his dad, and partner had hold money on it. I suppose he was mortgaged. I never did ask him, most likely it was, like we all were. And he only had 3 cows, but he was milking them cows, and they had a cheese factory at that time already. One guy was making cheese down there on Connie Trunk Sea. Oh, I'd say about 3 miles from where we were. And the neighbors were saying, well, what the world is the matter with you? She hauled the milk of 3 cows. I said, what the heck? The other farmers had 1 or 2 cows, and that just so they had for their own use, see? He says, yeah, but he says, if I got 50 cents, that's 50 cents I've got, he says. But it didn't take him long. He had a big herd. I remember a good many times I was only a kid, and I'd be up. They'd never hear me get up. I never was a hard sleeper. And I'd go and get the cattle, and I'd milk them. I milked as high as 18 and 20 and 22 of them before they were up in the morning. My brother, you couldn't get him out of bed.
I'll never get up.
And my sister, she always was sick. That's the way it's going in life. You're here today and tomorrow, we don't know.
Well, we're just about out of tape, so well, thank you for talking with us.
Well, that's all right. That's...